Welcome back to Inside the Business of Sports, the Sports Business Podcast, coming out of Cleveland State University. I am Michael Carlisle, and I am joined, as always, by Professor K, Jim Kaler. He's a professor at Cleveland State, one of my mentors as I work my way into the sports world. And we have a very, very exciting topic to go over today. We have recently seen some movement inside the Cleveland Browns organization, and they are no longer going to be playing at First Energy Stadium. They're going back to Cleveland Browns Stadium. So that is what we are going to talk about today. We're going to talk about some naming rights. Jim, let me bring in naming rights. Big hot button issue going on in Cleveland right now.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's going to work out favorably for the Browns. We'll have to wait and see. But getting the right to resell naming rights, and at the same time, it won't be too long before they're doing a lot of major renovations to that stadium, so it could help drive the value even higher.
Yeah, the Haslams have come out and said that they are going to do some renovations. There was possible talk of a new stadium, which would have entailed a whole different set of way the naming rights will work. But before we start diving into some of these Cleveland Center things, or just, you know, naming rights in general, let's get a breakdown on what naming rights are. How do they work for sports arenas and stadiums?
Well, naming rights really are all about brand recognition and exposure for the company that will pursue it. So a naming rights deal can provide a company with, as you know, a significant amount of exposure and visibility, not so much because the name is prominently displayed on the outside of the stadium or the arena. It's all about the media coverage. Coming live today from Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse or Progressive Field, media exposure is really when you're a brand and you're evaluating your investment. That's where the real value comes on. And then it can, you know, be used for a number of other things, for entertainment and hospitality.
Yeah. So you brought up the fact that they're, you know, getting that exposure, that brand name exposure. It's great because they're going to announce where they're playing at the start of every single game. It does not matter what sport you're playing. But something that we also learned in the intro class is that when fans see their favorite players, you know, wearing certain things, or their team is associated with certain things, they're more likely to go out and purchase in that product that that company is putting on.
Oh, Michael, I'm glad you remember that part of class, but you're right. If the fans really know that said company is a big sponsor of the team, they're twice as likely to purchase and three times as likely to refer that product. So we like to refer to that as the 2X and 3X factors. But at the same time, that's assuming that the brand is doing a good job of activating that partnership and just not sitting back on their heels.
All right. So let's get into some of those massive naming rights deals that we've seen. So what are some of those largest naming rights deals for arenas and stadiums in the United States? And how much are these deals worth per year?
Well, the ones that are big as of late, I like to think of the new stadium out in L.A. where you got two NFL teams playing. You got the Rams and the Chargers. So that's SoFi Stadium. And from what we can tell, that deal goes back to 2020, but the reported annual value on that deal is $30 million. So big, big investment for SoFi to put their name on that stadium. But when you look at what's driving that, market size, LA is a big, big market. And a building like that is going to get its fair share of big time events. So they've already hosted a Super Bowl, and my guess is that they'll be in the rotation. You get the Super Bowl on a regular basis, but just a couple of weeks ago, they hosted WrestleMania. You know, so once again, more pay-per-view streaming value there coming live from SoFi Stadium. But then when you look at, so that's a stadium. The arena that kind of caught my attention, Golden State Warriors, not too long ago, opened up the Chase Center, and their timing was brilliant coming off of all those Golden State NBA championships. But the numbers I have on that are probably in the $15 to $20 million a year for Chase Bank to put their name on the home of the Golden State Warriors.
Now we're talking $30 million a year, $20 million a year. These are massive, massive numbers. And you brought up SoFi and the fact that it's not only that they are, you know, they put their name on the stadium, they're going to get Super Bowls. There's two teams that play there, but all of the events that can go to SoFi is just insane with the stadium that they have built. And we see, you know, with these newer stadiums, they are going to draw in a lot bigger opportunities to get other deals outside of just the home sports team. You're going to have concerts, you have, you know, your WrestleManias and things like that. So that is also massive exposure. You're not just doing that in the season for the sport, you know, that you're sponsoring that team.
You raise a great point about concerts, because typically the arenas are going to get the lion's share of the concerts, but the mega concerts, the big, big concerts will go to the outdoor venues and the stadiums.
All right. So how do these naming rights actually benefit the teams and the cities that own the arenas and the stadiums? Because these companies, they don't own the stadium. They're just getting the opportunity to put their name on it. So how does it benefit those cities and teams?
Well, you know, that's going to come down to how the deals are structured. So it can benefit both. It can benefit the teams or the municipalities that sometimes are paying a heavy, heavy part of the construction cost for a new arena. So I go back to my days with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We opened the new arena and our owner, Gordon Gunn, had the opportunity to either put his name on the building or we could sell it, but some of that money was going to go back to help retire the debt on the arena. So I don't mind letting our listeners know this, because a little bit on the QT, Michael, but we had pretty much a deal in place with Key Bank to put their name on that arena. And at the last second, Borden, to his credit, I mean, the man's a billionaire, said, "Nah, I'm not sure I want all the signage that comes with it. I've got the ability to match any offer." And he said, "Nah, let's just put my name on it." And he had some subtle signage on it, and he wasn't going to go crazy plastering his name all over the building.
Yeah, so the Gund Arena, it always was an interesting name. And obviously now, you know, anybody who didn't know is named after the owner. But it was interesting the fact that he decided to turn down the rights, to give that right, those rights to Key Bank. Key Bank is obviously a major player here in Northeast Ohio. Do you have any other inside information on what really was the – why do we go with Gund? What makes him turn away from the Key Bank money there?
Well, number one, he can afford to do it. Okay. Number two, he had a great relationship with Key Bank. I think he and his family might have been the biggest stakeholders in the bank. And the, you know, for those listeners that might not know, Gordon's father was a successful businessman right here in Cleveland. And they were in the brewery business. They were in banking, which was now Key Bank. But the big money came in when they invented a decaffeinated coffee. Today, you would know it as Sanka, and Gordon's father sold it off to Kellogg's. And as any smart businessman might do, he said with Kellogg's, "Well, we'll just take stock." So the annual stock dividends from Kellogg's really increased the Gunn's family's overall wealth. And listen, a shout out to the Gunn family, because as you may or may not know, the Gunn Family Foundation pours millions and millions of dollars back into Northeast Ohio and supporting institutions like Cleveland State.
Well, that is great news to hear. And it's awesome that, you know, they were able to do that and kind of keep it in-house. Are we seeing any kind of initiatives by these people who get the naming rights to be more out in their community, or are they already kind of there? They already have a little bit of an established foothold. So they say, you know what, let's toss our name on this stadium. It creates a little bit more goodwill. And now we're also going to be able to network to everybody else when our name is broadcast on a Saturday, Sunday, whatever day they're playing for the sport.
Well, and really what you're talking about, why companies would do these deals, a couple of things: brand recognition and exposure up front. Okay. And then that comes with the TV coverage, but also what it can do in the community. These deals are intricate in the way they're put together. So more often than not, if you buy naming rights for an arena or stadium, you'll probably get the right to use that facility a couple times a year. So let's just brainstorm a little bit. If and I don't know what's going to happen with the new Brown Stadium, but if Sherwin-Williams, a company like Sherwin-Williams, I'm sure there'll be speculation that they could be one of the companies. If they were to put their name on the stadium, why not have their annual meeting and dinner inside the stadium? Why not bring their top salespeople from around the country down to the stadium for a little flag football game? You know, why not do a charity fundraiser in a ballroom inside the stadium? So it's all about how you activate and put the deals together when you're structuring an agreement like that.
Okay, great. So those are some of the good things that we can hope for and we can expect, especially as we watch to see what happens with the Cleveland Brown Stadium naming rights. But what are some of the drawbacks to having a corporate name attached to any arena, and how are fans and locals going to feel about those names? Because they may not always love it. I can remember one time very specifically, not too long ago, there was a team just out to the east of us that had a name switch, and their fans were not necessarily happy.
Now, would you be talking about the Miami Heat?
I would not be. I would be talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers losing the name Heinz on their stadium, which is a staple in Pittsburgh, and now they're Acrisure. Saw a lot of traffic on Twitter. People hated that name if they were Steelers fans. They always wanted it to remain Heinz.
All right. Well, I'm going to give our listeners a little bit of insight on that deal because I developed a friendship with the chief marketing officer at Heinz. And the day that deal went down, he had no idea it was going to happen. It came from upstairs and senior management and ownership at Heinz. And his name was Michael Doherty. So they said, Michael, get up to the office. We've decided that we're going to do naming rights with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Michael had no idea this was coming on, but they flipped it on. And they said to him, like, okay, now that we've done it, why don't you see what you can do to make it pay for itself? So some of our fans might remember, because the Browns were part of four teams that had these promotions, and Heinz was also a sponsor of the Browns, but they used to do Heinz ketchup in the red zone. So you remember all the broadcasts that you might listen to on radio, and if you were in the red zone, that was also tied to Heinz ketchup. What did Heinz do? They went over to the local retailers, the Giant Eagles, the Krogers, and all their other grocery stores that they, and they did big, big football promotions. So Michael said, with just that inside the red zone promotion throughout the NFL season, that they more than got their money back. But here's the other tidbit on that deal. Heinz really didn't pay a premium. I think the Steelers were struggling to get that deal done. So Heinz kind of stepped forward as a good and local corporate citizen. I will help the Steelers out. We'll put our name on it. But that's the backstory on that deal.
And now they are. So they had Three River Stadium. They, you know, tore that down. They got the other field up, Heinz Field, and now Acrisure. And I cannot get any numbers, and it's not. I cannot find any reports of exactly how big that deal is. But I would imagine now, with the way that we see naming rights going, as these new ones start ticking off, we could see a large influx of money compared to some of the older deals. We talked about the SoFi Stadium getting their $30 million a year. We could expect big, big numbers from new naming rights.
Yeah, but I want to go back to a case study on a naming rights deal gone bad. And I'm not referring to the crypto deal down with the Miami Heat, but I want to go back.
However, that one was also not very good.
Yeah. But I want to go back because I got some notes on this one. I knew you were going to ask this question. And some of our listeners will remember Enron Field.
I remember
home
that.
Of the Houston Astros. It opened in 2000, and it had a 30-year, $100 million deal. So that, in today's market, that would be a bargain, $3.3 million a year. But a year later, Enron filed for bankruptcy amidst a financial scandal that really rocked the company and its investors. Michael, I would tell you that at Cleveland State, one of the reasons that you have business ethics built into all your classes is because of some of the shady business that Enron was doing back then. So they went belly up. So here's the Astros. They're left with a stadium bearing a disgraced name, and their fans weren't happy. So they got through it. In 2002, they bought the rights back. They must have settled out of court, bought it back for a song and a dance at $2 million, what was left on it. And they turned around. This is one of the great recoveries of all time. They sold it to, you know the name of that ballpark today?
Minute Maid Park.
Minute Maid Park. And Minute Maid came up with, it's reported, $7 to $8 million a year. So disgraceful, yes, at 3.3. Great recovery. Let's get the number up. Now it's worth $8 million a year.
Well, and that is a direct tie into kind of that last question about how fans and locals are going to feel about these names. If you have a company that maybe is, you know, doing some shady business practices, and actually I thought at where you were going, I thought you were about to say your first curse word on the show. Yeah, you did not. If those companies are doing that shady stuff, there's a chance that people are not going to love that. Or if there's a brand that you have that maybe is no longer favorable. I can remember back to the old NASCAR days. It was the Winston Cup, and Winston was a cigarette, and then they had to change that because those things fell out of place. We get, you know, breweries that sometimes they fall off and other people come in. So not everybody is going to love those names.
No. But if you look at the history of naming rights, in most cases, teams and facilities recover, you know, but you raise a great point. You got to do your diligence. So I'm sure the Miami Heat was excited to get that crypto deal done, but, you know, did they really do diligence on that company? And the whole crypto category, as we talked about on the other show with the Super Bowl, it's just, you know, it's kind of on hold right now.
Yeah, crypto has taken a massive hit. So staying away from those right now would probably be a good idea. But I am also not graduated from college with any business degree yet. So take my advice with a large grain of salt. But let's hop back into another question. How do these naming rights deals compare to other revenue streams for the teams? Obviously, TV contracts are massive. But, you know, when we're talking merchandise and things like that, how do these deals compare?
All right, so I pulled some NFL numbers since we're talking about the Browns and future naming rights. But Forbes did a little study going back to 2020, and they said that the average, this is only the average NFL team generates about $86 million from ticket sales, okay? So as we talked in the intro class, ticket sales is the bread and butter, but the new king in revenue is what, Michael?
It's TV.
Yeah, it is. And in that same study, Forbes estimated, and this is already outdated, so it's gone up, that the TV revenue for each team is worth $296 million. So TV is king. Ticket sales are the bread and butter. And, you know, naming rights is a nice little addition. Now, having said all that, not all NFL teams and cities are created equal. And I'm proud to tell you that the people that are behind the ticket sales genius with the Dallas Cowboys, they're all former Clevelanders. Two of them worked for me at the Cavs. Yeah. So the Dallas Cowboys in 2020, $621 million. In ticket sales. I mean, we're talking about millionaires flying up from Mexico City in their private jets to own a suite at AT&T Stadium.
That is insane that they are doing that much in ticket sales. And they have a fantastic naming rights deal as well. I was taking a look at AT&T Stadium is pulling in just a massive, massive number. They got $400 million over 20 years, and that started in 2013. So Jerry went through, built the stadium himself, was able to sell naming rights, and he's going to recoup some of that. Obviously, they're doing fine in ticket sales. But obviously, every market is not going to have this. So
that's, remember, that's 2013 money. Just imagine if they were to pull that off today. You know, they'd be north of where SoFi came in at $30 million.
Cleveland State University's new sports and entertainment management program, where students can turn their passion for sports and entertainment into a rewarding career, gain hands-on experience, and learn from industry experts in the rapidly growing field. Now, let's get back to the conversation. So are all of these stadiums are not going to get this. So is that going to be based on market size, the area in which stadium is located? What are some of the factors that are going to play into that?
Well, yeah, you could do a look at market size, and I did a little bit of that coming into the show. So let's use the New York Mets, okay? Citi Field, 2009 number, $20 million. Let's go smaller, though. I dug up the T-Mobile Arena, small market, Las Vegas, home of the Golden Knights. That's a 2016 deal, $6 to $8 million a year. So market size plays into it, but also in that same market, Las Vegas, the NFL deal, 2020 number, $20 million for Allegiant Stadium. Now, the other thing that can spike that is Vegas is going to get its share of Super Bowls moving forward. So if you're in a market that can get a Super Bowl, a Final Four, AT&T Stadium has had Final Fours, that helps drive the figure up, because the broadcast numbers coming from, you know, Final Four tournament are going to be significant.
Yeah, and there are some pretty disparaging numbers when you talk about the high and the low end of some of these deals. Like, I got it right here. The Ford Field in Detroit, they got that naming rights deal for $50 million for 25 years.
Bargain.
Back in 2002.
That's a bargain by today's standards, right?
It absolutely is a bargain. Then you flip the script and you talk about an AT&T Stadium, a SoFi Stadium, Allegiant Field. Like, those are huge numbers compared to something that we're seeing. So is the newer stadium going to be a draw for some of these corporations as well?
I think it is. And I think that over time, brands, because they share best practices. I mean, it's not a secret to see how these partnerships are being activated and how you might be able to get some secondary use out of the stadium or use it for your local community relations. And, you know, if I'm a big company and I'm flying everybody to my city and I can take them to a suite in a great location on a building that's got my name on it, how much more business can I write as a result of doing that hospitality?
And you can also write that off, a little business expense there. So you kind of alluded into my next question. How are these naming rights deals changed over time? And what trends are we starting to see in the industry?
Well, a great time to bring up a recent deal that is reportedly one of the biggest. And that is the new arena in Seattle. Okay. So Amazon purchased the naming rights, and Jeff Bezos can purchase just about anything that he wants, but
except the Commanders.
Yeah. he didn't, you know, that's interesting. That building at one time was Key Arena when the old Seattle Supersonics played there. But Amazon decided to call it Climate Pledge Arena. Okay. So now that's a different spin that we haven't seen, because it's really kind of a cause-related message that Bezos and his company are saying, listen, I've got more money than anyone could imagine, but like, what else do I want to do with it? What good do I want to bring around? So that's going to be a centerpiece of his challenge for other companies to do their part when it comes to climate control. And some interesting things have come out of that. Well, first thing is that in a couple of years, that arena will be powered 100% by renewable electricity. Okay. So if you're going to going to put that name on it, you better back it up, right? And then Todd Lewicki, who's the CEO of the Seattle Kraken, said that their aim is to produce zero, I said zero, zero waste, source food locally, and eliminate all single-use plastics. So we go to most arenas and stadiums, we're going to find plastics that are hard to put into the recycling bin. Okay,
so plastic straws, forks, spoons, all that.
Yeah, and Bezos really says, here's a quote from me. So we've secured naming rights, and instead of naming it Amazon, we're calling it Climate Pledge Arena as a regular reminder of the importance of fighting climate change. And they look forward to working with the ownership group out there in that arena to really inspire global climate action. So if I were the Browns, I can only hope that there was a, you know, multi-billionaire that wanted to use this new stadium as a cause-related move. But that was a pretty interesting deal. The terms of that deal are still floating around, but somewhere between $300 and $400 million over the term. So, well, you know, 30 to 40 a year, you know.
Well, and we talked about it at the beginning, you know, one of the reasons that people do naming rights is for brand recognition. Well, Amazon doesn't need brand recognition. That is one of the most recognizable brands on the planet. Regardless of the country, people know what Amazon is. So it's nice to see that they are putting in, you know, in something that will go to a cause. We actually had a guest on the show not long ago, Eileen McMenamin, who has kind of turned me on to, you know, understanding the sustainability and what this stadium is trying to do. So that is a really great thing that will help the team and the community, because if they're generating a stadium that is, you know, carbon zero or net zero, that is going to improve the area around that stadium as well.
Yeah, and let's give some credit to Amazon's employees. Because Amazon was facing some pressure from the employees who they all got together and submitted a proposal to Bezos to really develop a comprehensive climate change plan and to reduce the company's overall carbon footprint. So, you know, employees play a role in these deals, and they also play a role because if you work for a company that's got naming rights, you're probably going to have some tickets filtered down your way sooner or later.
You will absolutely get some tickets filtered down your way. So how do these companies decide which stadiums that they want to sponsor? Like, what factors are going to play into, okay, so we want to do this in Cincinnati or wherever? Is it just availability, or is there typically some sort of tie to that city with that company?
Well, historically there's a tie. So you could go through and see the geography tied to it. Every now and then, you'll get a company that is getting ready to move into a market, okay, and going to be a major, major player. So the one I'm thinking of right now, I mean, Intel just moved into Columbus, or they announced plans to have a major, major presence there. So, you know, if they're for the Browns' sake, if there was a big, big company that we don't even know about today, that's getting ready to move its corporate headquarters here, a European company that's going to open a domestic headquarters here, that would be a great move for a company to do that. In a much, much smaller way, I remember right before we opened Gund Arena, we were talking to Target. Target was getting ready, the department store, they were getting ready to move into the market. And they bought signage and a pretty big sponsorship in the arena a year and a half before they ever opened the door. So they were getting that brand exposure early. Like, hey, what's going on with the Target signs down at the arena? Well, they were getting ready to come to the market, and they wanted to make an investment. And we were happy to sit down and put a plan together that was more backloaded than front-loaded, but allowed them to start getting their brand recognition built up.
All right. So you brought up Gund Arena again. And for anybody who doesn't remember your background, you have spent a lot of time in the motorsports industry dealing with events in motorsports.
Yep.
So what are some of those some of the most creative and interesting naming rights that you've seen for stadiums and arenas? Because you've seen a lot of different things go to different stadiums and different arenas.
Well, I'll go back to Climate Pledge right away. I think that's pretty interesting. But I'd have to come back to you and do some more research here. But remember this, Michael. Naming rights are not just for big arenas and stadiums. We can go down to the great state of Texas and see naming rights on high school stadiums. And the other creative one that I remember is right off of Interstate 90, as you're heading west out towards Elyria, where the Lake Erie Crushers play, okay? And that at one time was All-Pro Stadium. Gentleman that I knew that they were in the freight business. So they move freight, and he believed in sports marketing. And he put his name on. And so when you say unusual, a lot of times the naming rights deals fall under the business to consumer category, you know, United Airlines and Key right, Bank right. And what have you. But in the B2B role, business to business, well, then you got to start thinking about how am I going to use it as a hospitality vehicle? Because I'm not selling freight shipping to the average fan sitting behind home plate, but I am working with a lot of businesses that will move their freight around the country. So, and in that case, it could have been a little pickup game down on the ball field. I mean, you're a baseball fan, so if you were in the shipping business and all of a sudden you get invited to a game and a chance to take some swings in a minor league park, you probably think you could take one deep and knock it out.
So my brain thinks I can take it deep. My body is definitely going to tell me something else at this point in my life, but you're right. I would take my chances, get out there and take my hacks. But so those kinds of things are really fun and things that, you know, you can do. So what are some other possible potential future developments and changes that we could see with naming rights in the industry with arenas and stadiums?
Okay, so the one I'm going to keep my eye on is Las Vegas. There is a group out there called the Oakview Group. They're building and re-engineering older buildings, building new buildings. And they are going to take the lead behind bringing an NBA team to Las Vegas. You talk about Showtime. You talk about Vegas. And the people that I know say it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. But the other thing that Vegas can do, because they're Vegas, is they're going to be able to put a lot of concerts into that marketplace, you know? And, you know, if you're a concert promoter, if you can go to a city that's going to sell out a show three or four times in a row before you're moving on to the next city, Las Vegas kind of fits the bill. Las Vegas, market size wise, isn't the biggest city in our country, but the number of conventions they get and the number of visitors that go to that city is going to make that NBA arena and the naming rights huge. And then I think of, here's where maybe another point on the conventions. There's a huge, huge trade show that happens in Vegas every year called the Consumer Electronics Show. Okay. It goes on for a week, and Sony and, you know, all the tech companies are out there. But when you have an arena right next door, if you want to entertain your clients, you might rent the arena out. You might buy your own act or attraction. And so Vegas is an interesting market that can do enough in music to keep the building afloat until one day they get an NBA team. Who knows? Maybe LeBron's an owner in that new NBA team or what happens. But listen to this podcast 10 years from now and you'll say, yep, we got an NBA team in Vegas.
Well, and I could absolutely see that happening just because the NBA already has a pretty decent footprint inside of Las Vegas with their summer league taking place there. So it would make sense to me why they would be looking to move there. And you bringing that up made me think of a team that could potentially be on the move in the Oakland A's. I am a
big baseball guy. Everybody knows that. That stadium is falling apart. I don't know if they're going to get a new one out in Oakland. They could be looking to move. And Vegas has been talked about as a potential landing spot for for an MLB team as well.
Yeah, and there's a you talk about economic impact. There's a suburb of Las Vegas. I think it's called Hendersonville.
And it's Henderson, right outside of.
If you're the head of city development for Henderson, what would that do for you as you're looking to get other businesses to come to your area? So the economic impact of getting a Major League Baseball team in that market. And look, Vegas, early on, people were worried that, Michael, you probably know this and have spent some time there. Vegas is a three-shift city, the biggest three-shift city in North America with the casinos, right? And so they were worried, could the Golden Knights sell enough tickets? Could the Raiders sell enough tickets? But I think that with all the shows and activities that go there with visitors, that the NBA would have no problem selling out in that city.
Yeah, I don't think they would have any problem selling out there either. So, but Jim, that was the last question I have for you. Is there anything else on naming rights you want to touch on before we break for the week?
No, I think timely that we brought this up. It'll be interesting to see how things play out for the Browns. Maybe just a reminder to some of our listeners that Dick Jacobs did the same thing that Gordon Gunn did. He preempted a naming rights deal and he bought it himself. So when the ballpark opened up, it was first Jacobs Field.
Oh yeah, I remember.
So, all right. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you today about naming rights. And, you know, as we continue to do these shows, it's our hope that there's some kids out there in high school that are hearing about this and thinking like they could be like you, Michael, someday. They could actually come to Cleveland State and study sport management and find a job in the industry where they would never be bored. I could promise them that.
Well, I certainly hope that this show will inspire some other young people to, you know, chase that dream of working in the sports industry. I know it's been one of the greatest decisions that I have made, but Jim, let's get out of here. So guys, this is Inside the Business of Sports. We will be back next week for Professor K, Jim Kaler, Michael Carlisle. We'll see you guys next week. And remember, Vikings row together.